It's time for Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3. Brought to you by the Hippocrates Health Institute in West Palm Beach. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org. Now here are the hosts of Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates, Anna Maria and Brian Clement.
This is Health, Happiness, and Healing with Anna Maria.
And Brian Clement, Hippocrates Wellness. It's good to be back. Here we are once again as a big worldwide family coming together to learn, singing Kumbaya, opening our hearts, our minds, our souls, and more importantly, hoping that this makes a bigger, brighter future for you. Today I have somebody on that I've learned to respect over a short period of time, which is rare, usually takes a very long time for me, because he works with an organization called Verthermia. And about 3 years ago, we had another doc on because the lady sitting in here who was actually engineering and helping us organize all of this introduced me to an organization that was doing what Anne and I consider heroic and effective work. And I heard about this first during the AIDS epidemic. The CDC slipped and they shut them right down, but they said we were getting an 80% reversal with AIDS. And the next day I looked for it, I couldn't find it anywhere. This is actually pre-internet. So it was even harder than today. Sometimes you can capture it and hold it, but you couldn't do it then. And it was 3 years ago, we get on and we're interviewing a doc out in California, and he's saying exactly what I know they did. They were taking blood out, heating it at a high temperature, putting it back in and killing viruses. So this doctor says, the FDA, under a research protocol, is letting us do this with advanced stage 4 cancers, palliative cases where basically people are ready to die. Medicine thinks they're going to die. And so the FDA says, well, go ahead and see if there's anything you can do to help them. And they were getting an incredibly high percentage of people who prolonged their life. Now, this gentleman we have on today is actually the guy who's running this powerful organization. And he's helped me with one or two people. His name is Dr. Swishenberger, and he's up in Kentucky. That yesterday was just hit by a tornado a little earlier than it should be. So how are you doing up there today?
Well, I lost a few trees, but other than that, everything's just great. They missed the house and we were able to clear the road. So thanks for asking.
That's it. So tell us what this is about and why it works.
Well, you have an interesting grasp on history because indeed this was originated as an antiviral treatment focused on AIDS, but as it turns out, fortunately, anti-AIDS agents and drugs were developed in concert with this, and it turned out the FDA, as usual, they favored the pharmacologic approach. But we didn't forget about it, and early on, Dr. Vertrees, whom you interviewed 3 years ago, and I were working together. I'm a cardiothoracic surgeon by trade and critical care physician who has been doing a treatment called ECMO, which is extracorporeal membrane oxygenation to treat respiratory failure, ever since the early 80s. Now, you've heard about ECMO because of COVID. Yeah. During COVID, patients who failed ventilator support were put on ECMO around the world, and we got about a 52% survival on patients who had failed ventilator support during COVID.
And let's point out, Doc, that 82% of people put on ventilators died.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And that's exactly where it became so dramatic, because when they were put on ventilators early on, they were dying at that rate. And we came in with ECMO, which at that time was quite adventurous, because we didn't know whether the COVID was going to infect the nurses or the doctors, or the blood was going to spread the disease, or the anesthesiologist was going to get infected, or it was a lot of unknowns. Right. But as history is now written, we learned how to put the cannulas in and put them on ECMO and treat the patients and get a 52% survival of out-the-door survivors on patients who had failed. So that technology has now become very well known and accepted in major hospitals around the United States and the world. Now, as an offshoot of that, I was a cardiothoracic surgeon. My colleague, Dr. Vertrees, was a perfusionist as well as a PhD. And the two of us got together. And my concern back in the 90s was advanced lung cancer. I was a thoracic surgeon, and I was very frustrated that I would operate on patients successfully. They would get treated. successfully, and then somewhere down the road, their cancer would recur.
Yeah.
Then we would track chemo, and maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't, and then they would recur. Hmm. And so I kept thinking there has to be some other mechanism by which cancers can be perturbed. Let's use that term.
Yeah.
Because I hate to say cured. I hate to say
shaken up.
Blocked.
Let's just say perturbed. So Dr. Vertrie spent his PhD period studying the effect of temperature, external temperature, on cancer cells. And lo and behold, we found out that there was a window, what we call the therapeutic threshold, between 41 and 43 degrees centigrade. And that temperature, which is quite warm, 42 degrees centigrade right in the middle, is 107.6. Now you say, oh my gosh, that's really high. That's higher than any fever I've heard of. And the answer is, yes, it is high. But that's why we have to control it. And we've learned using these veno-venous perfusion techniques, or a form of ECMO. It's a little advanced, but nevertheless, if you see the circuit, you understand it's quite simple. We draw venous blood out of the lower body. We heat it. We dialyze it. We filter it. And then we reinfuse it right above the heart in the upper body. And then the heart pumps it to the whole rest of the body. Now you go, okay, that's simple enough, right? But we have heated the blood to a precise temperature.
How do you come to that temperature? Because I know back during the 80s, it was a high temperature, but it was undefined. How did we come to that 107.6?
Actually, that's what Dr. Vertrie did for his PhD in the lab back in the late 90s. He was in the lab, and he took tissue cultures and cancers and subjected them to different temperature ranges. And he found that a number of cancers very much responded badly, or else they were perturbed or they died, depending on what term you want to use, when you cultured them in the presence of these higher temperatures. Mm. Now, if you think about it, man has evolved over hundreds of thousands of years as a mammal who can tolerate temperatures under different atmospheric conditions as a hunter-gatherer. We started out in Central Africa. We all know that. And then we evolved and emerged out of Africa, went around the world, and we still stayed in very hot climates, and we also populated very cold climates. And the human body developed what was called heat shock proteins and adaptive mechanisms for that exposure. Now, we still get cold when we get out in cold temperatures, and we still get hot. But we can tolerate them when the environment is controlled. And what we found is that adaptive mechanism of normal cells allows them to be subjected to this higher temperature for controlled periods of time. Cancer cells, on the other hand, have lost contact inhibition, and they've lost the ability to recognize their neighbor. That's why they keep growing.
Yes, yes. Mm. So what you're saying, it's not only 107.6, but there's a real clear definition of how long you can do this, and probably which cancer requires the length. Am I correct in this?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, what we have a notion from his studies early on. We learned that lung and colon and pancreas and breast may be the ones that respond the best. Since I was a thoracic surgeon, I focused on lung because it's the leading cause of cancer death in men and women in the United States today.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's so prevalent and because it's so lethal, I thought that was a good place to start.
And let's stop there and tell the listeners, if you'd asked me, and probably you, 40 years ago, how did we get lung cancer, we'd say overwhelmingly it's cigarettes. But give the percentage of how many have never been smokers. No.
You know, it's interesting in that there's still a lot of influence from smoking. Why? Because as people, we are resistant to change. There are still people that smoke a lot. There are still people alive from when they smoked as teenagers, and they're still influenced by it. And oh, by the way, we were clever enough to invent vaping. And oh, by the way, we're clever enough to invent marijuana, which requires deep inhalation and breath holding. So, so we haven't exactly eliminated smoking. I think it's wonderful that we went on a campaign. I used to be part of that whole effort to try to get people to stop smoking. And I still do. I do a lot of smoking cessation counseling and a lot of addiction treatment. But the point is that smoking is still the number one
cost
influence in order to get cancer. And don't forget about secondary smoke. Mm. Remember, all of us used to ride in airplanes.
Yeah. Is it true? Remember that craziness? Why did we ever do it? So is it true? Somebody has told me, or at least I read it in a journal. I think it was JAMA. They said that they think 30%, up to 30%, of lung cancer today from non-smokers. But what you're saying, maybe that's not true because secondary smoke, or you grew up around smoke, may be part of it.
Or maybe they smoked long time ago. Yeah, that could
be. Exactly. We all, we have a lot of environmental and challenges that involve cigarette smoke. I mean, up until very recently, you could smoke. There were smoking sections in restaurants.
That's right.
Up until very recently, there were smoking sections in airports.
I know.
I mean, it's really hard to eliminate the influence of smoke that you're inhaling when you're exposed to it for long periods of time. Now, let's talk about the ones that have never smoked. Back when I was a thoracic surgeon, I actually did treat some people that were in very controlled environments. I did have to resect lung cancers on some nuns, some people that were in cloistered in monasteries, some people that were clearly in an environment that did not involve cigarette smoke. And in that case, some of it's congenital. It's passed on in your family genes. Some of it is spontaneous, to where the cancer just develops because your genetic code becomes abnormally influenced in one way or another. And some of it is from radon. We've learned that here in Kentucky. We have to check that in all of our homes. We've learned that there are other environmental influences, such as in inhaling different poisons that we use on our fruits and vegetables. So I think the idea of preventing cancer is to be knowledgeable about exposure and do the best you can to try to stay as healthy and nutrition and exercise and weight control and all that. But you can't pick your parents.
Oh, you're right. So when we come back, we're going to talk about case studies. You know, people, forget case studies, human beings you've seen take this treatment and how well many of them are doing. So we're going to be right back.
How are you feeling? Wellness awaits you right here in West Palm Beach. Hippocrates Wellness Institute has been transforming lives for over 50 years. Located on 60 lush acres, the Hippocrates Wellness Institute can reverse chronic disease, help you lose weight, increase your longevity and immunity. Call for your consultation and tour today, 561-471-8876. That's 561-471-8876 for Hippocrates Wellness Institute. Now back to health, happiness, and healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org. Now here are the hosts of Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates, Anna Maria and Brian Clement.
This is Health, Happiness, and Healing with Brian.
And Anna Maria Clement here at Hippocrates Wellness. And we're here with Dr. Swishenberger, who's this thoracic surgeon that is working with an amazing therapy that we hope that will be a part of the therapies that we can also give to our guests going through our programs. So you have so much experience. Give us some of the case stories you have.
Well, Anna Maria, we've been doing this now for almost 20 years. Mm. And you say, wow, how many patients have you done? Well, we've been very careful.
Yeah.
We started off in the lab. We developed this technique in the lab. Then we also did large animal studies. Then we verified it and published it. And we had a lot of input. Mm. And then we did a phase one trial early on, back about year 2000. In lung cancer patients. Mm. And what we found was many of those lung cancer patients who had very advanced cancers that responded to no other therapies that would live a year and a half longer than anyone would have predicted. So that first trial was kind of a tease because we said there's got to be something there. There's a signal. Mm. And so then we learned during that period of time that it was a little bit hard to control the temperature. So I applied to grants to the NIH, and over a period of about 7 to 8 years, refined the technique that we were using in order to very tightly control the temperature. And we found that if we tightly control the temperature, we don't see any side effects. Hmm. So we targeted the 42 degrees centigrade, as I mentioned earlier, 107.6, to where we keep that at a very steady temperature. We ramp up for 45 minutes approximately. We hold it for 2 hours, and then we cool off for 45 minutes. And we found that the majority of patients, whatever cancer they have, that it responds in such a way that it's been perturbed by that heat challenge.
Well, this wasn't
amazing.
Let me ask you questions, because I think I know a little bit of your story. You're too humble to tell it. A lot of this came out of your own pockets. The doctors, you believed passionately in this so much. Yes, you went and got grants, but initially you were funding these studies?
Well, I'm a university professor. I'm a full professor with tenure currently at the University of Kentucky, and I was the chairman of the Department of Surgery for 13 years. And what I've learned is if you invest your heart, soul, and mind, and you have passion for patients, that you're willing to put your time and even your personal finances at risk in order to be able to make something happen. To write a grant is very labor intensive, and to be able to get venture funding or industry funding or personal donations is very labor intensive. And to be able to work for free is also labor intensive.
Yes. It's impossible. So you have to make a living.
Yes. So we all dedicated ourselves to trying to figure out what the signal was telling us. Mm-hmm. And we look at it as a signal even still, because right now we're not 100% sure which cancers are going to benefit and which won't. But we also have learned a great deal in terms of which ones respond the best.
Yeah.
We've learned that lung cancer, ovarian cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, and recently prostate seem to be the ones that right off the top of our heads works the best.
And these are the biggest killers today. So it turns out nature sort of helped on this one.
Well, exactly. Well, you know, think of it. The ones that are the biggest killers are the ones that are the most aggressive.
Yes.
And the ones that are the most aggressive are the ones that the chemotherapy runs out of steam on. Chemotherapy and immunotherapy have a role. But when they run out of gas, there's really nothing to offer except for more side effects from the chemo or the immunotherapy. Yeah. And so we target patients either who do not want to tolerate the side effects and the long-term treatment of those type of therapies. We will treat those earlier, but we also treat a lot of patients that have exhausted their options.
Yeah.
And then we say, look, we think we can help you.
Well,
we don't say that we're going to cure them.
No.
Well, we say that we're going to help you.
You shouldn't say that. I mean, cure is a marketing ploy. It's a marketing.
Exactly.
We do the same thing. We support the body.
Absolutely.
And, you know, give every possibility for the immune system. And that's what you're doing. You're getting the bad guys out of the way so the good guys can do their job and then hope for the best. And it works many, many times.
Yeah, but you've seen that. So let's say now they're totally exhausted. They did the surgery. They had ovarian cancer, for example. They did all the chemo and now the cancer is back and now they come to you.
Henry, we see ourselves as synergistic to what you guys do. I have a great deal of respect for your program. You have a multi-pronged approach through nutrition and through different types of therapies that can help the body become stronger. And what we think is our treatment we focus very tightly on developing our treatment to be safe and to be able to be efficacious on very advanced cancers or in cancers that are not responding to any chemo even early on. If you have a cancer that the side effects of the therapy are worse than what the good effects are, we feel like this particular environmental stress on the cancer can be very helpful. And we've also found that if we treat cases that do not respond to chemotherapy or immunotherapy, sometimes when we treat them with the hyperthermia, they become responsive again.
Yeah, which is great. And another option that's not as invasive, doesn't take time, doesn't weaken the immune system. We've sent several patients, I think three to be exact, down to Texas, and I'll talk about a fourth, that you had such graciousness that you helped to save this guy's life. And two of the three did very well. The one that didn't was back eating hot dogs and drinking beer. And the fourth story I'll tell you about is a young man, probably 60, came to us back 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah.
And he said to me, what would you do additional to this? What is the best thing you can do? And I talked about hyperthermia. I talked about heating the bloodstream up. Mm-hmm. And he was on his way back to the largest Cancer Institute, I won't name their name in this country, who was going to do radical surgery on him. Mm-hmm. And when he called you up, you, not somebody else, you said, look, before we treat anyone, we have to test you to see if your cancer is active and how active it is. And when the report came back via the program, he had healed cancer. And rather than saying to him, as I often hear, you still better do treatment, you said you don't need the treatment. So congratulations for remembering the oath you took a long time ago.
Well, like I said, I've dedicated my life to being a cardiothoracic surgeon, critical care physician. And the best thing, it's always what's about the patient. It's always doing what's best for the patient. And I have a huge amount of respect for the large cancer centers, which I've worked with throughout the country, and respect the fact that when there's a hiatus in the therapy and you've achieved the goal that the treatment was supposed to achieve, you go with that. You give that the longest chance possible, because every therapy you use generally has a very good effect on the majority of the cancer cells in the body. And there's always a few, especially once they become very advanced and metastatic, there's always a subset of cells that laugh at your therapy. And that happens to chemotherapy, it happens to immunotherapy, and unfortunately it happens to hyperthermia. Is that what you're doing is selecting those cells that are responsive out, and you're resetting the clock on those that may not be responsive.
Now, you said something early on, doctor. I want to bring this before I forget it. You said that the body, through evolution, develop something called heat shock protein. So, so when you were doing the research, you actually saw these hot proteins come out in the process of heating the body?
No, they don't actually come out. What it is these are adaptive proteins to help protect the body from environmental extremes. Uh-huh. If our body had not evolved to tolerate environmental extremes, we would have been limited to a very small, narrow of environment in our evolution. So think of different animal species that you know are restricted to one very small area. It happens in Australia, right? All the marsupials stayed in Australia. They did not evolve. And there's other examples of that, to where animals are not adaptive. Homo sapiens sapiens is adaptive.
Here's another interesting question. I know that there's some docs now experimenting and getting some pretty good preliminary results with cryo. They freeze, not these large organ cancers, I don't think they're doing, but maybe skin cancer. And they're finding that to do the same. So it's a similar...
Completely different. It's a similar concept, but a completely different approach. Cryo is freezing tissues, which causes the liquid in the tissues to crystallize and destroy the cell. So if you can target the actual cancer itself, especially if it's a small nodule or if it's very contained, you can freeze that area with a small margin, to where you freeze the cancer cells, basically destroy them, and then destroy a small rim around the cancer cells, then you can literally treat a localized cancer. What we're talking about in the hyperthermia arena is a very advanced metastatic cancer, mostly, or a cancer that is not responding to chemo or radiation, or a cancer to where the patient has a disease to where they can't tolerate the chemo or radiation, or they don't want to tolerate the chemo or radiation. All are circumstances that we can be helpful.
I think what you're doing, Dr. Swischenberger, you give people hope, because many times people are put on palliative care and it's like, so is it over? And a lot of those people come to us too. And, you know, we have to have hope. And this is giving it serious hope. And
not only hope, but data.
Serious data. Yeah.
Well, people get very confused about the term palliative care. Palliative care is not no care. Palliative care means that the disease has advanced beyond that level where you can talk about cure, which in some circumstances we can talk about cure.
Yeah.
But we're targeting patients that have cancers either early, where we can influence the treatment to come, mm-hmm. or later when the treatments have not been effective. Mm-hmm. And that I don't call that, if you want to call that palliative, we've got patients with breast cancer that have been out there 30, 40 years. Is that
exactly.
They're doing pretty darn well.
I have a sister that's now 37 years out of advanced breast cancer.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what miracle did that, but I do know that I would call that an effective therapy.
Well, mm-hmm. Dr. Sichenberg, one of the miracles are the FDA actually approved this. And to me, that is a miracle because I've been for 54 years working and watching how little of that happens. So this is FDA approved. And before we leave today, tell people how they can get in touch with you. I know that you're doing this outside of New York City. You're doing it down in the Southwest in Texas. And soon there'll be other institutes doing it. Yeah.
What we did, Brian, is hand selected a facility that would be able to cater to patients and be able to take care of them the entirety of their process, be able to evaluate them when they come in, have a procedure room, in this case, an operating room, with an experienced anesthesiologist that I work with, an experienced perfusionist, an experienced intensivist, and an experienced interventional radiologist. And we have all these people work as a team to where we have not had any complications directly from the procedure, and we're able to control the circumstances and get good outcomes.
So how do people call you and do this?
Well, we have a website, and the website is HEATT, Heat, or the company's name is Birthermia, or they can contact us through you. And I think that if they go on our website, that's verthermia.com.
You go ahead.
Yeah, Verthermia. Verthermia or MIA. Verthermia.
Well, this has been a pleasure to have you on. You know, it's wonderful to see a passionate professional who loves what they're doing and now getting success that may have taken you a large time in your career to see as much success as you're having now.
Well, Brian, you've experienced it in your institution, so
wonderful.
You guys know exactly how it feels.
It feels great. We're finally doing the work we're meant to do.
Yes.
And all of you out there listening around the world, find what turns you on, what impassions you, and your life will transform. Until next week, be well.
Thanks for listening to Health, Happiness, and Healing with Hippocrates on Legends 100.3. Call for your tour today, 561-471-8876, or visit HippocratesHealthInstitute.org.